Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Tony just got back from Austin, Texas, from a mini ECF event. ECF is e-commerce fuel. It's a event run by my buddy Andrew Udarian. And this was a one-day event. It was different than the main event, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, just one day, 9 or 10 to 4.
10 to 4. Okay.
Yeah. He's letting people sleep in.
And you were told that you would have no responsibilities whatsoever at this event.
I was told. It's a lie that I'm often told by people. But no, it was actually pretty funny. So ECF does a full event, just like Seller Summit. They have a closed community. So you have to be part of the community to go to their event, which is the main difference between their event and our event. But Andrew does these one-day events throughout the country, throughout the year, to sort of connect the community members. And so they get to hang out. What was interesting is this one was in Austin, Texas. However, over half of the people at the event had flown in. So it wasn't just locals. It was a lot of people came in from all over the country to attend.
That's crazy for a one-day event, huh?
Yeah. So there was people did meet up the night before. There were talks. And then there was a dinner. There were a couple dinners that went on later that evening. But yeah, basically, you know, Wednesday night for people that got in early and then all day Thursday and Thursday night.
Cool. And so just ECF, it's an e-commerce community. I think you have to make over $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe to be in it. And hey, actually, before we move on, is a one-day event worth it?
For an attendee or for just throw a one-day event?
Just to throw one.
Absolutely.
It is. To throw a one-day event?
So much easier than a multi-day event. And for the main reason is you don't have to have a hotel. Right? Like they rented out this. So you know those venues where people like, the thing I could think of is where people would get married. Right? Like they don't want to get married in a church. They don't want to get married outside. So they rent out some sort of like cool venue. And this is what this looked like. It looked like this was probably a place where they did concerts, weddings, wedding receptions, because there was like a stage and there was a bar in the back, you know, where you could serve food from and things like that. So that's probably for running a one-day event. You don't have to deal with the hotel and all the minimums and the exorbitant costs of food. Now, if you rent, most venues have requirements of, you know, you have to hire a licensed catering company. You just can't walk in with Taco Bell, right? So that's mm-hmm. probably one of the differences there, but it's significantly less expensive than working with a hotel because the hotel sort of forces you into working with all of their suppliers, their internal, you know, even like AV, right? Like they had an AV company that was like one guy, right? So he's monitoring it. So I'm sure he was way less expensive. If you're doing it at a hotel, it's 10 grand to walk into the building, right? To do AV. So, you know, I think cost-wise, very smart idea.
I mean, that begs the question, why even have a full conference at a hotel?
Because the nice thing about having a full conference at a hotel is, so here's the big difference, right? ECF is a community already. The people that attend already know each other or know of each other. There's a lot of people that have already networked, right? So this is just allowing them to get together in person. When you have an event where you don't have that community all year long, or it's, you know, kind of fragmented a little bit, the hotel allows people to hang out together at night. They're all staying at the same place. It ensures everybody gets there the second morning, right? They only have to walk down from their room. So yeah, there's definitely pros and cons to doing that. And I think with a one-day event, like you're obviously just getting, you know, 6 sessions, right? In the one-day event. So there's a big difference, but I think it's definitely something that, here's what I would say. If you're thinking about doing an event, do a one-day event first. Test the waters and see, like, do I even want to do this? Are people even interested, right? You're less financial risk to go in with a one day.
I think a one day sounds riskier because if someone's going to travel somewhere, they're less likely to do it for a day. Like, that's why I didn't go to the ECF event. It was one
Correct.
Day. I was like, yeah. I'm not going to fly out for just one day.
Which is why, like, for Andrew, people would do it because of the connections that are already made in that community. However, if you have a local enough audience, like I have, okay, so this is a good example. Jordan Page, who runs Fun Cheaper Free, lives in Salt Lake City, Utah, or in that area. She's been holding one-day events for 10 plus years. She usually holds them in like churches or community centers, and she charges like $30, and they're all about like how to be a better budgeter for your family. You know, just very great sessions. She's a great host. Like she's very dynamic. But she gets thousands of people that like probably all drive in, right? But she has such a big audience in Utah that it's totally worth it for her to do a one-day event. It's also worth it to do a one-day event for 30 people.
Okay. I didn't think about it that way. Yeah. Although that sounds stressful to me. Like there has to be a big enough payoff, right?
Well, I think sometimes the payoff is the extreme loyalty. Like Jordan's fans or followers are exceptionally loyal to her, right? She can do no wrong with those people. Mm-hmm. And she's a great person. Like there's no reason why people wouldn't fall in love with her anyway. But I bet if someone like, let's just take Laurie from Passionate Penny Pincher, right? Like she's got a huge following. I guarantee if she said, hey, let's do a meetup in, you know, Chicago or some city, she'd probably get 50 to 100 people showing up that want to meet her and talk about freezer meal planning, or even like someone like Aaron, right? Aaron's done lots of local meetups. Andrea Robinson used to do local meet. She actually did all the Finding Joy or Joy Chaser meetups, right? Where she would like do an evening where they had like encouragement and, you know, you charge like a small fee and those people become your most loyal followers. So I think in that way, a one-day event is less risky because, you know, you don't have to go all out and cater breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like you can just do like box lunches, things like that, make it really affordable. Right. And you know your audience. You probably have a good idea if like, hey, I think I can get 40 people or I think I can get 400. You probably know that from your audience already.
So this event, mm-hmm. you said it was from 10 to 4.
Yep.
What was the structure? Was there food offered? Was there, I don't know.
No, it was just Lord of the Flies style. You know how I drew it. No. So 9 a.m. doors open, coffee 9 to 10. Obviously coffee is a huge factor. Like don't ever have an event without coffee. You and I were at an event a couple weeks ago. They did not have coffee the first day. People were angry. I have never, like I'm not a coffee drinker, so I don't understand the coffee rage, but the coffee rage is real. People were very angry. And the next day they had a coffee cart in the afternoon, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So the people spoke. So show up, coffee. 10 a.m. they kicked it off. They did these series of shorter sessions where people got up and presented sort of like a highly focused topic rather than sort of like these, you know, broader things, which I did like that because if someone was on stage that you weren't interested in, you were like, okay, well, it's 25 minutes versus like an hour and 15 or 50 minutes. Like right. One of the guys who did a good job, he talked about Amazon PPC. I don't sell on Amazon. I don't care about that. He was interesting and I was interested in learning about it just because I do know a lot of people who sell on Amazon. But it was also like, okay, well, worst case scenario, this guy talks for 20 minutes, right? And I'm sure there's something that I can take away from the talk. So I did like the shorter talk format, mm-hmm. Which I thought was good. So the first talk kicked it off, which I think people need to pay attention. It was all about creating content. And
was it, did it start out with the 15 minute ones?
Yeah, that was the whole day. It was all like 15 to 20 minute talks.
Oh, okay.
And nice. Then Q&A for the person after that. So depending on the talk, some people had more questions than others. But content kicked it off. I think that to me is just a sign of like where we're headed. You know, so many people getting hurt by Facebook's changes. So many people getting hurt by the Google update. You know, there's just like having different ways to drive traffic is a big deal. The person who got up first was in the cannabis business. So you know, certain things are not available to her for advertising and things like that, but she can create the content. So she's developed a YouTube following where, you know, she just talks about different things involving cannabis. I don't know anything about cannabis, so I can't really speak to, like the topics, but the one thing that I did take away from that session that I thought was really interesting is that someone asked during the Q&A, well, hasn't everything already been talked about? We get this with blogging, right? Hasn't everything under the sun's already been written about? Well, her top performing, and how we're going to lose all of our listeners, her top performing video on YouTube is how to roll a joint or how to smoke a joint. One of the two. I don't remember. And of course, it did create a lot of laughter in the audience. Some of it uncomfortable and some of it, you know, people were like, that's funny, right? And her point was, you know, yes, that's like probably there's like a million videos on how to smoke a joint, right? But there are still people that are interested in learning how to do that, and they will find your video and they'll watch it. Like, this is not something that everybody knows how to do. It's probably right. a good thing. But what's really interesting is, so she was basically saying, like, even if you think it's too basic, it's probably not too basic for people that are searching for it. So even though you think, well, everybody knows how to do this, or everybody knows how to, you know, like our friend that's teaching people how to buy real estate overseas, right? Like, it's like, well, no, not everybody knows all the rules about that. That's information that's really hard to find. Like, just because a couple other people have done it doesn't mean you can't do it. Our friend David Crable talks about all the cottage food industry laws, right? So there's probably other people that talk about that. So that, but doesn't mean that he can't talk about it as well. So that point really was sort of like that. Okay, we talk about this, but it's really very true that it's still okay to make very simple content for people because people are still looking for those sorts of things.
And this person who started out, was it, I guess, YouTube content then?
She does YouTube content. She has a podcast. Her podcast is actually geared towards people who sell cannabis. So basically, like, marketing for people who are in that industry. And then she has, like, TikToks and Instagram and things like that as well, all driving back to her D2C site.
So if she were to pick, which is the best platform for her?
She was pretty high on YouTube.
Pretty high on YouTube.
Look at my pun. Look at my pun. I didn't even know.
I didn't get that until now.
The funniest part about that whole talk was that the guy who got up after her, which was the Amazon ads guy, he's like, funny story. My wife and I went to Amsterdam a couple years ago. We decided we're in Amsterdam. Let's do some drugs, right? Like this, like
Andrew's. Is that what Amsterdam's known for?
Yes. Yes, they're known for
drugs. I didn't know that.
And,
okay.
And women of the night, let's just say. So this is like this recording is not suitable for minors. anyway, so he's like, my wife and I were in Amsterdam. We decided we were going to do some drugs. We went and bought some can or some marijuana, and they just gave it to them with like papers, and the marijuana was in a bag. Right. And he's like, so we sure enough went back to our hotel room and Googled how to roll a joint. And she was like, did you see my video? So anyway, it was kind of funny, like the full circle of that. And I'm sure Andrew's like, oh, great. Now we're at the cannabis conference. So anyway, the point of all of that is, even if you feel like it's super simple, it's still worth making content about. There's still people that haven't, that are searching, and they might like you, your personality, the way you present things, your camera angle, whatever it is. Don't think that it's saturated.
Was that the key takeaway from that first one?
That was my key takeaway. Her key takeaway was start making content, because most of the people in that room are true like sellers, right? Content is terrifying to them. It's funny because, like, I think you've seen this too. Like, you and I have two buckets of like people. We have our e-commerce bucket and we have our content creator bucket, and they don't really like each other that much. Not that they don't like each other, but like they never cross, right? There's very few people that are like, oh, like, for example, like Kim, she's a perfect example. She was a content creator, moved to e-commerce. She's really good at both. Aaron, content creator, e-com, did both. But like, it's the crossover is very small. And so I think that e-commerce people are super afraid of creating content, and content creators are super afraid of inventory.
Yeah, I was going to say, we get it from both sides, which is funny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's definitely pros and cons to each.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And then I understood you ran the YouTube table.
So, yeah. So that was a disaster. So you and I are very good friends with the folks at ECF. And, you know, we've been going to each other's events for years. And Patrick, who's the community manager for ECF, messaged me a couple weeks ago and said, hey, can you run a community table at the conference? And I was like, of course, I'll do anything for you guys, right? Like, I love to help out. I want to, you know, be part of the community. And so I emailed him back and I said, yeah, I'd love to help you, but I'm not like a YouTube expert. I know a decent amount about YouTube, but I definitely, like, if you want me to be an expert in something, put me at the email table, put me at the influencer table, put me at the content table, right? Like, whatever. I didn't know what the tables were at the time, but, you know, and he's like, oh, no, it's totally fine. All you do is facilitate and make sure the conversation stays on track. I was like, oh, I'm really good at bossing people around. So perfect. You know, sign me up. So we had the content session. Then we had a Amazon PPC session, which was pretty interesting. I think if you're in the ECF community, you can see the talks. So it might be interesting for you to watch. And then, you know, they were like, okay, everybody go to your little area of the room for the tables. So I walk over to the, you know, they got my name on the wall and everything. And I go over there and sit down, and there were a couple people already sitting there. And then a couple more people came over. And so I'm like waiting for the conversation to start, but they're clearly waiting for me. And I like within like 2 seconds, I realized that Patrick was an absolute liar. And so I sit down, and the girl who spoke on content and YouTube was like, I have a couple questions for you. And I was like, what? Like, are you kidding me? This is not what I signed up for. So it ended up with like me giving a YouTube talk to like the 4 or 5 people at the round table. And then like one guy left and brought another guy back. He's like, hey, can you talk to him about like TikTok shopping? And I was like, no, I can't talk to him about TikTok shopping. Like, I don't have a TikTok shop. I mean, I know a little bit about it because of some of our mutual friends, but so yeah, they kept firing away these YouTube questions. And I felt like there was a cartoon in the back of my head that I was like super computing all of your YouTube lessons in the course. And we just gave a YouTube webinar a couple weeks ago. So I'm like frantically trying to pull the data back up, you know, in my brain. Cause a lot of the questions were not super difficult because most of the people in there have not really created many videos.
Right.
But yeah, I was just like, oh, Patrick, I'm going to kill you when we get out of here. Like, how could you do this to me? Like, you could have put me in any other section. But the funniest part, I didn't tell you this, is that we're all sitting there and there's this guy that his name is Greg. I happened to be sitting with him earlier in the day. And he's like, he sells supplements. He said, I have a question for you. I have a YouTube channel already and it has 50,000 subscribers. Is that good?
That's great.
I was like, oh yeah, that's really good. And he's like, yeah, except for it's not really about supplements. I used to be a Christian piano player, like a Christian music artist, and he has millions of views on his videos, right? So he's saying this like as if that's not good, right? Which he was being very genuine about it. And everyone else at the table is like getting like wide-eyed and jealous. Like, wait a second, you have millions of views playing the piano, right? And he's like, but you know, he's like, I don't really play the piano anymore. And you know, should I turn on ads? He's like, one of my son or daughter, I don't remember who it was. He's like, they think that I should turn on ads. I was like, I think you need to play some more music and turn on your ads. I'm like,
although I have a different for music. People generally don't like that to be interrupted.
Well, yeah, but you can turn on the beginning and end, right?
Yeah, you can turn on the beginning and end.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah, definitely not in the middle for sure.
Yeah,
as they're singing their favorite worship song.
Yeah, I know that.
Have you been having red itching and scratching, and you know, like some sort of Ozempic ad? I don't know. So anyway, he's like, so should I turn on ads? And everyone at the table is like, the girl was like, give me your phone right now. She like went into his account on his phone. Anyway, so it was a pretty interesting talk. I think once again, the takeaway is video is there for you to make, right? Like you've got to start doing it. Our friend Dustin, who sells vacuum cleaners, we were just, you know, kind of brainstorming ideas, the types of content. And I said, you know what content is huge right now is these people that are like cleaning, have cleaning businesses.
Yeah, cleaning their rugs. I watch them.
Yes.
It's oddly
where the guy's
satisfying.
Like, shh, and he's like, scratch, scrape, scrape, yeah. Scrape. And you're like, how dirty are these people? Like, who had this rug? I never want to go to their house. Anyway, so we just brainstormed a lot of ideas about YouTube and talked about some of the best practices. And, you know, these people are all wanting to create content to drive to products, right? To drive to sales. And so that was one of the big things that we talked about, because the girl that gave the talk about content was saying, you know, it's hard to really attribute sales directly to the videos, except for the fact that she has a retail shop. So she has a retail shop along with her online store. And so she says, I will get people come into the shop and say, I saw your video today and I wanted to come in and grab XYZ. So anyway, overall, I think that the takeaway is if you're not doing video, you should be doing it. Like everyone wants to do it. Very few people are doing it. And so there's still a huge opportunity, I think, for people to win with video.
Oh, for sure. I think video is the future. I wish I'd started a while back, actually.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I started when I did. It's just a little more intimidating, I think.
Mm-hmm. Video's for YouTube, gotten so much better, right? People like back in 2010, nobody
you could make like a Barbie cake and people would watch that a million times.
You could. They would watch any kind of garbage you put on YouTube. Nowadays, it's a little harder.
Yeah. I mean, short form isn't intimidating, though.
Mm-hmm.
You can just pick up your phone. And then for the Amazon influencer stuff that you guys do you just use your phone pretty much?
Yeah, always.
You do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking side note on Amazon influencer. So after ECF, I went to a friend's house, Liz, who has the Amazon influencer tool, and Brian was rebuilding a carburetor for a motorcycle, and they ordered the parts off Amazon, right? And so we're like, what's the banana score? And then I was like, get the camera out. We have to film like you rebuilding the carburetor. He was like, no. Like, hard no. Like, I was like, fine. So anyway, video's king. That was the big takeaway from that. Clearly, I'm a big proponent, being the YouTube expert that I am.
Of course.
But this is the other thing that I've reminded, that we tell, you know how we tell people stuff all the time, but then sometimes we don't listen to ourselves. It's like, we always tell people, you don't have to know the most, you just have to know more.
Right.
Right. And so I'm going into this thing like in an absolute anxiety attack. And then I realized, like, I sure don't know the most about YouTube, but I sure do know more than most people in this room. And so, like, I was clearly the expert by, like, leaps and bounds, not having, like, a huge, in my opinion, a huge amount of knowledge of YouTube, right? So it was just, like, another reassurance is, like, oh, yeah, that's actually true. That saying that we tell people every day, we're not lying. It's actually a really accurate statement.
So, okay, so we just scratched the surface. So there's one talk on Amazon PPC, one talk on content. What were the rest about, or the ones that are stood out in your mind?
So there was an attorney that got up and talked and scared the crap out of everybody about, like, privacy notices, compliance, ADA. Probably not if you're in the content space as much to worry about, but if you do have an e-commerce store, I would definitely consult with an attorney to make sure you have the right disclaimers on your site. There's some little bit of nuances based on the state that you live in that's really important, and it's worth paying an attorney, like, $500 to $1,000 to, like, I mean, you could go to Steven Weigler. He's licensed in, I think, several states.
I don't think he's an expert in that, though. You probably want to get someone.
I don't know. Like, I don't, he's definitely not an expert in it, but it's like, basically the forms are mostly templatized, right? But there are nuances based on your area, but it's definitely something, like, we always tell people, like, Google privacy policy. If you had an e-commerce store, I probably wouldn't do that. I would probably get an attorney to do that. If you're a content creator, I would still use a Googleable, just because they're not typically coming after people that are in the content game, right? Because it's hard to tell how much those people make and, like, what's, you know, it's like way more ambiguous than if you're selling physical products.
I do know that a lot of people in that ECF have been hit with those lawsuits, right?
He had people raise their hand, and there were I would say 10 to 12 people out of 50.
Wow.
Actually really Beard Brand got hit. I think Eric raised his hand. So anyway, it was like a decent, it was enough to be like, okay, this is something that you need to take seriously.
Yeah.
So that was a really interesting talk, even though I'm not currently in e-commerce. I was like, yeah, that's definitely good to know, you know, moving forward. One of my favorite types of talks is when there was another cannabis company. It got to be a joke at the end of the day that it was a cannabis conference, because, like, half the people that spoke sold cannabis.
Hilarious. How is that possible?
I feel like cannabis and supplements are, like, the things to sell right now. Like, the competition's crazy too, but, like, those are the things people are going into. So they talked about affiliate marketing. Once again, like, the first girl that spoke, you know, you don't have some of the traditional advertising channels available to you, things like that. So using affiliates is a good way to advertise your products, right? Because, you know, you're paying based on a sale. So they basically did a really good job of walking through the entire affiliate process and how you pay affiliates. Because I think if you're not, like, for us, like, having been affiliates for lots of companies, it seems very easy. But as the brand who's never done an affiliate relationship, it's confusing, right? How do I pay? What do I pay on? Is it by click? You know, is it by purchase? Do I have to pay to be placed? All these different things, right? So anyway, they gave a really good step-by-step breakdown of how to have affiliates, right? So you're the brand, you're getting affiliates. They talked about using Impact, Share a Sale, different tools that you can use, or, you know, doing it on your own site with a plugin, like if you're on Shopify. The thing that they said that I told you earlier that I thought was really funny is that, and I always like it when people who have affiliates talk about affiliates when you're an affiliate, right? Because you're like, I know what we say about you. Like you don't know everything. And so they talked about, someone asked them a question, hey, what if you start paying affiliates? And let's just say you're paying $5 for an email address, right? And then as your business goes, you realize that that's not sustainable, right? $5 is too much because your customer is only worth XYZ. And they said, oh, well, you just lower it. And usually people understand. And I was like, or they remove all your links from their website and replace you with your competitor that pays you the $5.
That's correct. Yeah. Actually, that happens all the time.
Yeah. All the time. And they use a lot of like listicles to get affiliate placement, right, on websites. So I'm like, yeah, if you're in the top spot and you cut the affiliate payout, you are not going to stay on the top spot. They will drop you because everyone makes those lists based on who pays you the best. Yeah. So like the number one is the person paying $5. The number two is the person paying $4.50. The number three is the person paying $4.25. Like that's how it works with every affiliate that I've ever met in my life, including myself. So that was the one thing that I did think was funny. Which is why I think if you are a brand and you want to do affiliate marketing, you really have to know your costs before you put a number, because you should only go up.
I'm curious. So in that talk, are they using a share sale or are they using their own homegrown or like a Shopify plugin?
This is interesting. So they are using multiple platforms because so one of the things that they did, which I actually think is really interesting, is that they are using Impact for just like a regular person that would want to be an affiliate.
My least favorite platform, but yeah.
It's so funny because they were like, that's the best platform. And every blogger I know is like, I hate Impact. I was like, I used to work with those guys pretty closely. I'm like, nobody likes them. They have money that they haven't paid me for like 4 years because they keep telling me my 10-9 or my W-9 is wrong. And I was like, I've sent you every version of thing that I could possibly send. Like, maybe you're wrong. I don't know, just a thought. But it's like $72. So I'm like, I can't invest any more time in getting my $72 from you guys. Anyway, they do like, they're affiliates with like Forbes or Men's Health, right? So when Forbes is being an affiliate for you, they have their own tracking system, right? Like they want to use their own platform, right? So they have an internal thing that they use. So like they're using that with Forbes, but then with another company, they're using this. The problem is that it really messes up attribution, right? Because like maybe someone sees something on Forbes, clicks, doesn't buy, right? But then they go like the next day and see something somewhere else, click. So they do last click attribution. And at the end of the month, he was showing us his spreadsheet where he like pulls these clicks and like has to basically tell Forbes, even though they think they got XYZ, it's actually only this because the last click went to Men's Health.
Oh, so they can get charged like times.
Yes, that, because it's last click. It's the multiple platforms. So they have to take a spreadsheet at the end of the month and figure it out so that they're only, and he's like, obviously it's not perfect, right? Like sometimes they double pay, but it's the, you know, the best that they can do because they also use like Refersion, right, on Shopify. So they use a platform on Shopify for some people, but because the brands are bigger, you really don't have as much leeway to say like, well, you got to go use Impact because that's what we like. Like Forbes is going to be like, we're going to use whatever we want. And you're going to say yes, because it's Forbes and they're going to drive so much revenue for you that you're not going to argue with them.
That sounds like a huge headache.
Yes.
I guess if that was my only income source or the major one, then I would put up with it. But
they've built their business in, I want to say it's, I don't remember their exact numbers, like in 3 to 4 years to like a $4 to $6 million business. So, wow. I mean,
this is in the cannabis?
Yes, in the cannabis space. So you're like, well, okay. I mean, you know, it's, what are you going to do? Like, you can't do a lot of advertising. You can't.
Yeah, with cannabis, it's either social or. Yeah. SEO or affiliate or influencer.
And SEO is really tough.
Yeah.
With cannabis. So yeah, I mean, affiliates is sort of where it's at for them. And so many people are talking about cannabis now, like, because people are using it in so many different ways, and it has a lot of, like, I don't know what the right term is, but like the healing, like you can, they have like creams that you rub on your back. So if you have back pain, right, you can use this cream and it works pretty well. Or, you know, people use it, people take those gummies to, like, they're not marijuana, they're THC Delta 8s or whatever, right? So they're technically, you're not, like, you're not going to get screened on a drug test for them. So people are using them to help them sleep or using them for anxiety. Like, they have all these different uses now. So there's a lot of opportunity, but you also still can't buy ads, right? You can't promote that stuff. So you kind of got to go with affiliates.
Yeah. Okay. But man, I'm just actually, you know what, come to think of it, like, a lot of our friends do really pain in the butt stuff too.
For affiliates, wise. Yeah.
Like all the credit card guys.
Yep.
Like they have to be compliant, right?
Yeah.
Credit cards are really anal about the language and how everything's presented. And you have to be very careful and up to date. Like, if they change their policy, you got to be you got to be updating that stuff within like a couple of days. So I can see the hassle.
But if this is a 6-figure channel for you or a 7-figure channel, you're going to be compliant.
Yeah.
It's going to be a priority. So there was a talk, as you cringed at a little bit ago when we were talking offline, of like automation, Zapier automations.
Oh yeah.
Which I kind of like glazed, like, great talk, good guy. I was like, nope, not doing like that. You just complicated so much right there. I just can't. Nope.
You know what's funny about that is, like, in preparation for today's office hours, mm-hmm. I did a little video on it's called Make now, which is essentially Zapier.
A
much cheaper version of Zapier. And I was like, man, you know, I wouldn't even use this solution myself, because I just, like, it's like literally like a little bit of code to just send something from ManyChat over a thing. But like, there's all these steps in Make that I'm doing. Like, I'm telling people where to click and everything. And there's some idiosyncrasies about the tool. I'm like, good Lord, this makes things so much more complicated.
Yeah.
Zapier is the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to pay for it. You got to pay each time.
You pay per zap or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but his point was that the more you automate, the less error you have, the less people you have to pay, which he's right. Like, you've kind of talked about that too, just you go about it in a very different way. So in that sense, yes, he is right. Like, the more you have automated, the less chance for error, personnel error and that sort of thing. But he started talking and I was like, nope. I'm going to now check my email because
what he doesn't tell you also is zaps break all the time.
Yes, they do. And someone did ask that question in the Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, well, you know, you usually check them every once in a while, you know, and the guy's like, so it could be like 3 or 4 days. And he was like, like, yep.
Yeah.
And then, one of the final talk, but the last talk that we're going to talk about was, Cody Sanchez. Mm-hmm. Who was a little fireball. She's pretty interesting. She's the contrarian what? I can't remember her.
I mean, that's her spin. Like, she's a great speaker.
Yeah. She's on Twitter and it's contrarian something. Look her up.
Contrarian thinking.
Look her up. Follow her on Twitter. She is a very interesting person. And here's the one thing that I took away from her talk that kind of was like a mind-blowing moment for me. And of course, she's speaking to a room, and I would say 50% of the people in the room could retire tomorrow if they wanted to, like, financially. Like, that's the financial situation they're in. And she said, you know, there's nothing wrong with customer acquisition, blah, blah, blah. You know, she wasn't like downplaying that. She's like, but you're at the point in your businesses where you have to stop thinking about acquiring one customer and you need to start thinking about acquiring your competitors.
Right, buying companies, right?
Yeah. Like, quit the onesie twosies, start buying up your competitors in the space. And I was like, oh yeah, that's good. That's a good one.
Like, did I tell you, actually? I don't think I've even told you this.
You bought a handkerchief company?
No. In the content space, no. I'm considering possibly trying to acquire another e-commerce website. Because I've heard it's really good, but then again, I'm wavering a little bit because I don't know where SEO is going to be in 2 to 3 years also.
Is it called My Husband Quit His Job?
No.
Oh, that
blog
good.
Was too expensive. They refused to sell. But yeah, I kind of agree with that. It takes a little bit of guts though, right?
Yeah, but I was thinking of like, I know a lot of people in that room and I know what their businesses are. And I was like, oh yeah, like that's, I mean, she just sold off a couple. She owns 22 different businesses.
I know, crazy.
Under her holding company is over 100 million in revenue. Like, you know, it's a smart business thing. I think about even like people like our friend Dana Jean-Zimas, right? Who just went and bought businesses that she felt like she could turn around in a couple of years and resell. And it's like, yeah, if you have, that's something that I think more people need to think about doing is really what I took away from that is that this is not something that's out of reach for most people.
I mean, that's essentially what she teaches.
Yeah.
How to acquire companies and do the financials and all that.
Yeah.
And I agree, actually. Our friend Lars does this. Like he acquired a couple content sites, turned them around, and they're making a lot of money now.
Yeah.
So e-commerce, I feel like, is a little hairier, right? Because you got to figure out what to do with the inventory situation.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. But for content, like people have been doing that pretty easily for years.
Well, she owns like four car washes. I was like, car washes are money makers, man. Like, I want to buy some car washes. But yeah, so yeah, content sites. We know a lot of people who buy up content sites, actually.
Yeah.
Most people do it totally under the radar. Like, you don't know unless you know them well. Yeah. In fact, what's funny is our friend, I think it was Jim, bought one of my other friend's sites. So I knew she sold and I knew he bought, but I didn't know they bought and sold to each other. Like, that's pretty funny because like I knew she sold and I was happy for her because I knew she wanted to get out of it. And then a couple, or it might've been Deacon. Maybe Deacon bought it. It was either Jim or Deacon. But then a couple years later, I was talking to one of them and they're like, oh yeah, I bought XYZ. And I was like, you bought so-and-so's site? Like, I had no idea that they did that. And I was like, did you guys know each other before? He's like, no, but I knew both of them. And I was like, oh, that's pretty funny. Like, I didn't know you wanted to buy sites. I didn't know she wanted to sell, but I would have connected you guys 5 years earlier if that would have been the case.
That's too funny. So our mutual friend, Larry Ludwig, he acquired an e-commerce site and he pointed all the backlinks over to his site and incorporated the content. And all of a sudden I saw his website show up competing against me. Like almost overnight. I was like, okay, Larry, that's it.
That's it. It's going down.
It's going down. Yeah.
So anyway, that was the big takeaway of her talk. It's just like, okay, yeah, just need to rethink. I think people in general need to rethink that. And there's money to be made in buying and selling businesses.
I follow her because I'm trying to, I mean, she's killing it on YouTube. Basically, yes. All the video channels, because she has this film crew.
Oh, yeah. Standing right next to me filming her. I was like, oh, you're one of those people.
She's got a film crew and she does very professional looking videos. And that's why she's killing it. They're professionally edited and everything.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, what would it have to take for me to get like a film crew like that and just like blow it up? Because I could just invest all of my YouTube earnings back into that, right?
Here's the thing. Like, what are they going to film you doing? Like, she goes out and speaks everywhere. Like, are they just going to film you in your office hunched over the computer?
Well, no, I would just go into businesses and which is what she does.
Yeah.
And just interviews them. It'd be like it's essentially a video podcast that's professionally shot.
Yeah. No, I literally, her camera guy stood right next to me to film her. So I was checking out his equipment, obviously.
Yeah.
That's just not something you're already doing though. Like, I feel like she was already doing that and then she started to film it instead of vice versa.
I mean, every now and then I think to myself, hey, if I just invested all this money, I could really blow this up instead of my talking head on the bookshelf videos that I do, which is doing fine. You know, that's what I can maintain and manage, but
yeah, you could be Mr. Beast.
I would never, ever, ever want to be Mr. Beast.
Yes, that was our conversation over the weekend. I'd rather be rich than famous.
It's not just being famous too, but Mr. Beast literally invests all of his money back into the videos themselves. And it just seems very stressful and unsustainable what he's doing.
He can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the world. He can't. Like, he's like Taylor Swift. He can't, you know, do a dang thing anymore. So.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to not be able to like just walk down the street and go to the store. Not that I walk down the street and go to the store, but you know what I mean.
I mean, that's your typical day, right? You head to the mall.
I wouldn't want the Walmart driver to recognize me as he dropped off my groceries. That would be so embarrassing.
Walmart. Or if you're after like the thrift store and they're like, hey, aren't you Tony from...
Yeah. But overall, it was a great event. Andrew does such a good job of like bringing people together. They did serve us lunch, just so you know. And then they had an open bar at 4 o'clock. And in typical fashion, I told Brian, I was like, yeah, this thing ends at like 4:30. Like, you know, we were going to meet up and then go over to Liz's house and we're going to eat dinner in town so we didn't have to fight the traffic. And I told him like 5 o'clock and he's like, so I made dinner reservations for 6:30 because you don't stop talking. So I knew 5 o'clock actually meant 6:30. And of course I was late. I rolled up at like 6:35. I was like, sorry, I tried. He's like, yeah, I knew you weren't leaving there at 5 o'clock. So
yeah, there's no way. I mean, yeah, you're just a social butterfly.
Well, I will say though, like I am a social butterfly. I am an extrovert, but when you sit in sessions all day, and they had a cool venue set up. It wasn't like a conference room. There were like couches and chairs and all. So I was like sitting on a comfy couch half the time. It's just tired. It's like exhausting, like talking to people all day long. Like we feel this way at Seller Summit. Like we love it and we love meeting everybody. But at the end of the day, you're like, I just want to go in my room and like not talk to anybody for like 8 hours. And then I can get back up and do it again the next day. So, you know, there's definitely that component of it too. But where at the end of the day, you're like, yep, that was fun. Now I'm ready to not talk for a couple hours and move on.
Cool. So key takeaways is content.
Content.
An acquisition. Maybe we should have a lot more content sessions at Seller Summit.
I mean, I think that's the direction people are going. Yeah. It really is. And I think that, I mean, I think, you know, we still get this, like, is blogging dead? Is blogging dead? Blogging's not dead. Everything's just shifted. Content's still king and it still works. And people still want to get to know the brand and have a connection with the brand. That is never going to change. I think that's always going to, for certain types of products, right? Like you need, you know, a garlic press. Let's go old school with Scott Volker there. Garlic press, who cares? But you want to buy like, you know, a certain type of shoe, right? Like you're really hooked on the Allbirds.
I was thinking, I'm really into tennis rackets right now, but yeah.
Yeah. But like you want a connection with the brand, right? Like that's part of the experience. It's not just about the racket. It's about a connection with like certain players who use that racket and just everything that goes along with that. And I feel like with a lot of, it's why people buy Apple products, even though the iPhone absolutely sucks, right? Like my iPhone, since the new iPhone came out, like nothing works on it, right? Which I'm convinced is like an Apple conspiracy. But like, will I still buy another iPhone? Absolutely. Right. Because
you're stuck on the platform.
I'm loyal to the brand. But it does matter, right? Like Apple has created a crazy group of people that will buy their products, even though a lot of times their competitors are superior in many of the features. Doesn't matter because you're loyal to the brand.
I tried Rafael Nadal's racket thinking that I'd start playing like him.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
I didn't start playing like him.
What? You didn't have 130 mile an hour serve?
Nope. All right. Well, I guess we'll be talking about Seller Summit and we're developing the curriculum right now. So stay tuned. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.